All right, let's move along. So, to remind you again from the lecture, that halfway through our cycle, we get the surge in hormone levels, we get the most sensitive follicle to those hormone surges being released by ovulation. The egg, along with its supporting granulosa cells, the corona radiata, is released from the surface of the ovary, and the remains of the follicle will close back up again and begin to develop into the corpus luteum. So it'll go through proliferation of the granulosa cells and the thecal cells to form the two layers of the corpus luteum. You've had all of this already in female histology, so I'm not going to go through that. Let's now look at the major differences between the formation of these oocytes and the formation of spermatozoa. And it's all about differences in meiosis. So male and female gametogenesis is completely different in terms of the time course and the products made. So our female gonad has a series of primordial oocytes, diploid cells. They go through the S phase, duplicate their DNA, so they've got twice the amount of DNA, they're diploid. During meiosis 1, we have crossing over of the chromosomes, so this allows recombination of the genetic material by crossing over paternal and maternal chromosome pairs, swapping portions of them. And while we've got follicle development going on, it goes through the early phases of meiosis 1, and when we get to the point of ovulation, the oocyte completes meiosis 1 at ovulation. So only the ovulating oocyte will complete meiosis 1. All of the other oocytes are earlier stages of development of meiosis. The oocyte that's released, the egg, the ovum, will then have completed meiosis 1 and will exclude the excess DNA as what's known as a polar body. It's an inclusion body formed at the periphery. It has no future role in the development of our embryo or placenta or anything. It's a way of putting out the rubbish, getting rid of the excess DNA. It goes through the early stages of meiosis 2 and once again arrests at metaphase 2. Metaphase is when all the chromosomes are lined up in the middle of the spindle. And this ovulated oocyte will not complete meiosis 2 unless it becomes fertilized. At fertilization, it will complete meiosis 2 and exclude the excess DNA as a polar body. So we get a second polar body full of DNA. Now, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, this first polar body that was formed will also undergo meiosis 2 and divide into two, just as the oocyte's nuclear material did. So potentially there can be three polar bodies at the periphery of an oocyte. Usually you can see two, the peripheral one may not divide, but sometimes there'll be three. And what we end up with is the one that's fertilized is a haploid cell, contains half the amount of genetic material. The three other parts are excluded as polar bodies. And a single cell has been produced by meiosis. Everything else has been thrown away. Now, if we compare this process with male gametogenesis, then it's a different story. Within the seminiferous tubule of the testes, we've got a population of stem cells which lie at the, if you like, the cortical regions of the seminiferous tubule, right at the basal layer. These are our primordial germ cells generated in the embryo, and in the adult we call them spermatogonia. They're diploid. They produce all of our sperm. They undergo mitosis to produce, replace themselves, a lot of mitosis before puberty. And these cells will, at puberty, slow down in their mitosis and begin to differentiate to begin to form spermatozoa. So in male puberty, we get the beginning of differentiation of the Claire. Yes. It's the first one. Yes. I've got a class here. Can I go? Thank you. So, in the seminiferous tubule, continuously through your adult life, all the time, 2,000 sperm a minute or something like that I'm making. No, a minute? Quicker than that. Maybe a second. Quicker than that. Lots. We're going through this process, crossing over as we had for the oocyte, going through all of meiosis one. This time we generate two cells, which are the primary spermatocytes. They lie deeper within the seminiferous tubule. We don't throw away any genetic material. These cells then undergo meiosis two, dividing again to become haploid and produce four secondary spermatocytes, which are now haploid. We've now completed meiosis. This whole process is over and a lot more quickly, not years. And all of the DNA ends up in a haploid cell. It still needs to undergo the process called spermiogenesis, which converts this round secondary spermatocyte into the mature shaped sperm. And you'll go through this when you do male histology towards the end of VGDA. Each one of these are genetically different from each other. The only thing that's segregated here are the sex chromosomes in terms of the not recombining. Now, if we look at the male sperm that's produced following spermiogenesis, which is the transformation of that round cell into this structure here, it's continuous. Takes about 48 days from meiosis to ending up with a mature sperm, and 64 days in total if you include the development of the spermatogonia. The two hormones that we saw in the ovary have a role in the sperm development. Follicle-stimulating hormone stimulates the spermatogonia in the what's known as the spermatogenic epithelium, and luteinizing hormone stimulates testosterone production by the Leydig cells or interstitial cells. These are cells that lie outside of the seminiferous tubule and involved in male hormone secretion. The mature sperm that forms by spermiogenesis is about 60 microns in length. I didn't mention this to the first class, but I'll mention it to you guys. When these cells undergo meiosis, they don't complete cytokinesis, so they're all still connected together by their cytoplasm. So that's quite unique in that process. They don't become completely isolated from each other. There are bridges which connect them together. They only lose their connections with their siblings when they mature through spermiogenesis and throw away their cytoplasm. We divide this into three parts: the head, containing the nucleus and all the genetic material, with the acrosome over the top of it, a modified Golgi apparatus full of enzymes to break down the zona pellucida. There's a short neck region behind this and a long tail, and the tail itself is divided into three parts: the middle piece, the principal, and the end piece, packed into this initial piece here are all of the mitochondria wrapped around microtubules. These mitochondria provide all of the energy for swimming. The tail has the same structure as all cilia. It's got 9 microtubule pairs around a core of 2 microtubule doublets. And using a motor, it moves one microtubule with respect to the other, and that bends the tail backwards and forwards as you move it like that. That's the way it swims. There's enough energy in this little fella for about 72 hours of swimming. After that, it's all kaput. It's not going anywhere after that. So at puberty, we get all of the changes occurring in the male and in the female. At puberty, the maturation of the spermatozoa results in the sperm being formed. In a single ejaculate, we normally see about 200 to 600 million sperm in a single ejaculate. If you've got 20 million sperm, you're infertile. It's not enough to get the job done. The vast majority of the ejaculate is not the spermatozoa. It represents less than 10% of the total volume. The vast majority of the volume is synthesized by the accessory sexual glands, about 60% from the seminal vesicle, 30% from the prostate, 10% from the bulbourethral. All of these other secretions have other roles we don't have time to discuss today. The last thing I'll mention now is abnormalities associated with this process. In the male, I've already mentioned one, oligospermia is where low sperm count, less than 20 million sperm after 72 hours absence from sex. Azoospermia, or an absent sperm, is when the duct system is blocked or you get a failure for synthesis of the spermatozoa. There are two major mechanisms. And the third infertility in males is due to the tails being inactive, so-called immotile cilia syndrome. So the tail cannot swim, sperm can't swim, no fertilisation. They're the three forms of infertility in the male. When it comes to the female, the major abnormalities we've got to consider there relate to this long process of meiosis. And because it's delayed over such a long period of time, things can go wrong. It's all over and done with quickly in the genital tract of the male. The major problem we have in oogenesis is aneuploidy, which means an abnormal quantity of DNA within the cells. 3 major forms, trisomy 21, 18 and 13. Here's a trisomy 21. It's a female because you've got 2 pairs of the X chromosome, no Y. And here's the extra copy of chromosome 21. So you can see that this is a trisomy. There are 3 copies of it. Down syndrome is probably statistically the only one you need to worry about. The other two are reasonably rare. We don't see many of the other major genetic abnormalities because the egg, once it's fertilized, will never go on to develop into a conceptus. All of the major genetic abnormalities are disposed of in those first 2 weeks because of their inability to mature. There are, in addition to the autosomal chromosomes, abnormalities of sex chromosome aneuploidy. This relates to the movement of the sex chromosomes into the germ cells and results in a number of different sex differences. I'll stop there, we'll go through gametogenesis, and I'll be back shortly to talk about fertilization.